Thank you. Thank you. That's the way to get it started. Am I even hooked up yet? I am? Okay, good. All right. Tonight we are going to talk about determination and commitment. Determination and commitment. And I'm telling you, I am so excited about tonight and next Wednesday night. I went ahead and broke the news to Spencer because he told me he's not going to be here next week. And I'm so sorry, Spencer, because next week is when I'm going to give away the money. No, I'm going to give away some money. All right, let's talk about the envelopes for a second. Everybody putting money in the envelope?
Yep.
Anybody not put money in the envelope? Meaning, I got you an envelope, honey. Don't you worry. All right, I want everybody putting money in the envelope. I'm going to tell you what I want you to do with the money next week, and I promise you it's not going to be to give it to me. I promise you that. But I'm going to... You have, well, we'll talk about that. You, matter of fact, you might need to move up to the front row where I can watch you even closer. not to be promoted. All right. So, I'm going to go ahead and give you a little tip. Now, I because I've been kind of vague about it, I'm going to give away $100 next week. And that's my money from my envelope. It's not going to be all at one time. I'm going to break it out into increments. There'll probably be several people who will take home a little money, and I'm going to tell you what we'll do next week when we do it. But don't miss next week. I know that this right here puts a little kink in it, because if you tell other people to come, it reduces your chances of winning money. But I want you to anyway, to bring them here, because it's going to be fun. And I got a good closing session next week. So I want you to be here. Huh? Next Wednesday's the last one. Not forever. We will still have something going on Wednesday night. Will?
I didn't hear. Did you say we did or didn't need to bring our envelope?
You do not need to bring your envelope. That is yours. That's your money. And I'm going to tell you what I think you should do with it next week. Okay? All right. Part of the reason for the envelope, part of the reason for all of this is for us to save, to believe, and to claim what's yours. Okay? I want you to claim it. Don't miss next week. So far, these first few sessions, we've talked about the different mindsets. Just to recap quickly, pride, poverty, and gratefulness, they manifest in different ways. The pride and the poverty, they will manifest into pity, selfishness, greed, envy, and hopelessness. The grateful mindset will manifest itself into giving, generosity, humility, and contentment. These mindsets are not just financial mindsets. They are the same type of mindsets that deal with our relationships and with our health, depending on how you look at it. It's the same philosophy for those mindsets, okay? All right, last week we talked about giving. I'm talking kind of fast today because I've got a lot to go through. I'm telling you, I've got more sheets here than I've ever had, but we're going to get out of here on time, okay? So I want to cover all this. Last week we talked about giving, and I want to add something else to the giving portion of this. I want you to understand that a given spirit is the path to abundance. A given spirit is the path to abundance. Whatever you give, you will receive. And this is what I wanted to say about giving tonight. When you give confidence to somebody else, you will get confidence back. When you give encouragement to other people, you will get encouragement back. When you motivate people, they will motivate you back. Whatever you give, even money that you give away, will come back to you. Happens all the time. Friendships. You want to have friends? Be friendly. Have friends, give it away, it comes back to you. Everything that you do, love people, people will love you back. Everything you do comes back to you. The spirit of giving is the path to abundance. It's a mindset. It's a thought. It's an approach. It's an attitude of everything that you do, okay? Tonight, I got to talk a little bit about a negative, but I got a couple of good stories to go with it because I want to drive this thing home for us tonight before we get into next week. Tonight, I want to focus on the biggest hindrance that we have to enjoy the wealth that God blesses us with, of the opportunities that we have. And everybody knows it's a four-letter word, debt. Debt will take from us. In Proverbs 22:7, it says, "The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the lender." We've all heard that before, right? Everybody heard that scripture? The thing is, I want us to understand tonight, we've all heard it. We've heard it a lot. I'm not sure that we all believe it. I'm not sure that we all believe it because we go against it as a society. We go completely against it. We ignore that. Now, I did a lot of research this week. I've read books. I've looked through stuff, and I've been doing this for a little while. I cannot find anywhere in the Bible where we're given any instructions to borrow money. Not one time. And something caught my eye, though, this week when I was going through some of the stuff. There are scriptures that tell us that we are to lend. That you are to lend. Now, I think that ought to drive some stuff home to us, to be in a position to do that. See, God wants us to have the abundant life that he's talked to us about. And he wants us to do it by following his principles, doing the things that he tells us to do, by having those spirits, that grateful spirit, a giving spirit, and your wealth will increase over and over again. We hear it, we think about it, we believe it, but so many times we fail to act on it. We just fail to act on it. See, we're blasted in our culture that debt is the expected way of life. It's everywhere. You can't log on to a computer. You can't pick up your phone and go to any site for any length of time without getting an advertisement for a credit card or somewhere to borrow money to do something you won't know you want to do. Exactly. That's not a part of the equation. Right. See, that's how they look at it. It's not a part of the equation. Our culture is just blasted in it. We buy into it, into that mindset. And I shared with you last year when I did this how I can remember somebody at Delta, when I went to work for Delta, somebody in my church actually told me that I needed to go to the credit union and borrow money from the Delta Credit Union. Because he told me, he said, "They will never let you go as long as you owe money to the credit union." Now, that's what he told me. And I was 22 years old. I believed him. I believed him. That made sense to me. That made sense. See how easy that happens? People get talked into it. We just buy into the lie. I read a story in a book by John Maxwell that was not about money, but this is the story that's in there applies to what I'm going to tell you today. This story is going to show us how we become so conditioned to believe certain stuff that we stop questioning the process. We stop questioning the way we do things. And the story is this. There was a group of scientists that placed several, I don't know how many monkeys it might have said, but there were several monkeys they placed in a room. And in the room, they had one pole that went up. And on the top of the pole, they put a large cluster of bananas, a bunch of bananas, on top of the pole. They let the monkeys into the room, and of course, they start walking around looking for stuff. One of them spots the bananas. And the first monkey that tried to climb the pole, they had a fire hose, and they would knock the monkey off the hose. Off the pole. Every time he would climb up. And this went on for days that all the monkeys in the room, all of them at one time, tried to climb the pole. But before they could get up very high, they would turn on the fire hose, knock them off the pole. They'd go down. And the way the study went, it said that over a period of time, the monkeys stopped climbing the pole. They lost hope. They could see what they wanted, but they lost hope. Then they took the experiment a step further. And they would introduce a new monkey to the group that hadn't experienced the hose. Now, the other monkeys, I told you, have already been conditioned where they would not climb the pole. And they got to where they would not only not climb the pole, but if one of the other monkeys tried to climb it, they would pull him down. because they were conditioned of what was going to happen, so they wanted to pull him down and keep him from getting the fruit and to avoid him getting hurt. So they were being conditioned that way. So then they started introducing monkeys one at a time that would go into the group, and of course this monkey knew nothing about what had happened before. And the scientist said that when that monkey came in and tried to climb the pole, the other monkeys would pull him down as a group and would actually punish him. They would actually hit him to make sure he did not climb the pole. Keep that up. So they took it a step further, and then they started taking all the monkeys out who had had the fire hose blown on them and kept introducing monkeys one at a time, and the process just kept going, to eventually all the monkeys in the room, none of them had ever experienced the water hose, but they wouldn't climb the pole because it was passed to them. They had learned that behavior, and now they were at the point where they had never experienced it, but they just accepted it as the way it was, even though the fruit was there on top of the pole. Now, what that would show us is the monkeys had no idea why they weren't supposed to be able to climb that, but I want you to just think about that, about how we are conditioned in our culture today with credit. It's passed down, right? I dare say most everybody in here, not necessarily everybody, but most everybody, your parents, not trying to teach you a bad lesson, may have used credit at some point in time. Now, I realize that we got a wide range here. Some of you didn't get that lesson because it wasn't that prevalent. Matter of fact, there was a difference between what we would call credit and charging something. You ever heard that? I mean, there was a time when you would charge something at a grocery store, which is credit, except there was no interest involved. They just allowed you to run a line of credit or charges so you could get your groceries and pay for them when the time came. It was a precursor to it. But then when credit came along, credit was introduced, and it was introduced for people to make money at it. It was introduced for somebody to become wealthy at it. Because remember what the Bible verse says, that the borrower becomes slave to the lender. And so over time, credit became, especially in our culture, in the United States, a way of life for people. It's expected. Even today, we have it so ingrained in us that you probably have told your kids they need to establish good credit. Go get a credit card. Now, you can give them good instructions on there, and there are ways. I'm a big Dave Ramsey fan, and I believe in everything that he says. We just differ on one thing, and one thing only, as far as I know. I am not the type that just says credit is absolutely bad, okay? But you got to be real disciplined to do it the way that I say it's okay, and that is you never run a balance. You pay it off. He preaches and teaches not to have one. I understand that. But we bring our kids up, and in our society, we go to college now with student loans. Everything is on credit. And credit will absolutely pull you down. Always. It will hurt you. Always. Okay? So the idea of the scientific experiment with the monkeys, I want us to think about it for us, of how we are. I'm not calling us all monkeys here tonight, but we all have just been conditioned to accept certain things, okay? To the point of the fruit's there, but we don't think we can get to it because we think credit is the only way to make it happen. There are people today that would not even think that it's possible to pay cash money for an automobile. It is. And I'll tell you how, the craziest thing about that is you can have people who will tell you, I can't afford it, but yet they'll go buy it and make payments and pay for it on increments. So what you have to do is just flip it. You just flip it. You make the payments before you go get the car. And then there's no credit. But the problem is we have a hard time with delay, okay? We have a hard time with waiting. All right. Debt is driven by two things, in my opinion, and that is imagination and fear. Imagination and fear. We imagine that if we don't use the credit, we can't ever have anything. That's an imagination. And it's not good, and it's not true. But you see, we imagine it. It's driven by fear because we think that other people will think bad things about us if we don't have things that we can't afford, but we'll go buy it on debt to avoid the fear, and so we'll act like everything's good. See how that works? See, all that's deceptive, and that's all the way that the enemy works. This debt will destroy the possibility of abundant life that Jesus talked about. It will destroy it because you're always behind. Now, when I say that, I know that there's some people in here who make payments on time. I'm not saying you're always behind. But when you're making payments, you're always paying more for it than you should have paid for it, period. Sometimes it's crazy what you pay for it when you make payments. So I want us to get out of the idea of purchasing something based on the fact that we can afford a payment, okay? All right, the way to avoid debt is by developing the art of waiting. The art of contentment of where you are, to be able to wait. Now, that's a discipline, okay? That's a discipline. And it has to be developed. See, I go back to what I was talking about. See, our culture, I've already talked about this a little bit, but our culture is in such a way that we believe that waiting is wrong. See, fear kicks in if we think we got to wait. What if we never get it? Fear kicks in. What will people think about me if I don't go? Fear kicks in. But you have to develop the part of waiting, of being content of where you are. And by doing that is by being grateful, which is what we already talked about, and make that your driving thought. Now, there's a word that we use more than we think we do, and it keeps us from having a grateful mindset, or it gets in the way all the time. And that word is want, W-A-N-T, want. Most of it use that word way too much, so much that we don't even realize it how often. When I wrote this, I started trying to pay attention to my own talk, how many times I said want during the day. And even when I was writing this, here's my next line. I want you to think about how you use it. And I looked back at that and I laughed, and then I went back and circled it and said, see how easy it is? Now, that's a good want. Gotcha. But understand where I'm going with you on this, okay? I want you to think about how you use the word want. How often do you use it, and how it really affects your life? The word want is energy, just like the positive and negative, and it can be positive or negative. Sometimes it's necessary. We want things that are necessary, and sometimes it is good. But we just need to pay attention to our mindset when we use that word and what the true meaning of it is as we say it. Be careful not to allow your dominant thought to be thoughts of want. Don't let your dominant thoughts be thoughts of want. It creates a wanting mindset, which takes us back into poverty, okay? A poverty mindset. Think about it. Wanting something usually creates more wanting something. It's energy. It can also be very subtle. It can be subtle in our conversation, and I got to thinking about how many times that I might use the word want that I might tempt other people by using it myself. Anybody ever been in a conversation with somebody and say, I want a new car? If you're in a group of people, I guarantee you somebody else in that group will join you. I want one too. I want one too. I want a new car. And it doesn't have to be car. It could be a lot of things. You know what I'm saying? You got to be real careful how you say it and what your mindset is. So I want you to start paying real close attention. How often does that word come up in my daily conversation? And what is it? What is the deeper meaning inside that I've not even realized because I hadn't thought about it? Because we tempt other people with it. We plant thoughts in other people's minds. When we let our wants drive us, we feed the energy, and it can get on other people. Do you ever talk to people into spending money? With this kind of word, you might invite somebody to go somewhere, and they say they can't go, and you try to talk them into it. Come on, join us. Come, yes, you can come. Now, I'm not telling you not to be social with people, but I am telling you to pay attention to it. Because a lot of times, see, people can be so easily drawn into it. See, that fear kicks in. The fear kicks in. And if we're not careful, we can be one of the tools used to create problems for people. Keep things in perspective. Everything happens in God's timing. In other words, I know what the weather's been like last week and this week. How many of you want springtime to come early? Anybody? Papa does, I know. He told me yesterday. That's right. We want springtime to go ahead and get here. You know, when you start having a few days of warm weather, you start seeing some buds on some trees, the daffodils start blooming out there. We want it to come early. But understand this, everything happens on God's schedule. Everything happens on God's schedule. You wanting it to come sooner won't change the fact that the first day of spring is not going to be here until the middle of March. Okay? There you go. It can snow in springtime. I might tell you, I pray for that sometimes. Anyway, when we allow our wants to drive us, we get out of his timing, just like wanting springtime to come earlier. That's what debt is, trying to get things earlier. We create problems, and this is usually where the debt comes into our lives. Debt is where we want what we want on our schedule and not on God's timing. That's why it's dangerous. That's why it's dangerous. I'm going to read it again. Debt is where we want what we want on our schedule and not on God's timing. What we've got to know and understand is he knows when you're ready for it, and it's in his timing. The goal for tonight is to get us to better understand debt and what it does to us. A lot of us already know. We've experienced it. When you decide to eliminate your debt, you'll stop the bleeding and you'll get your feet under you. And here's when you get your feet under you, this is what came to me in writing this is, you stand up. You change your posture when you get debt under you, okay? Get it away from you. So tonight I wanted to talk to you about debt and determination and commitment. That's what's needed to gain control with what you've been entrusted with. My next story tonight is a story about a guy in the military. Does anybody know who Louis Zamperini is? A few? Okay. Most of you will know when I tell the story. Some of you have seen the movie. He was born in January 1917 to Italian immigrant parents. He lived in California, and he was a notorious troublemaker. The story of his life says that he was a smoker at age 5 and a drinker at age 8. He built an adolescent criminal empire based around stealing anything that wasn't nailed down from neighbors and local businesses. His family members were convinced he was headed to prison, but he finally abandoned his life of petty crime in high school when a group of girls charmed him into joining the school's track team. Encouraged by his older brother, he soon became one of the Southern California's top athletes. He achieved national high school records after blazing through a mile run in 4 minutes and 21 seconds in high school. After graduating high school, Zaffirini set his sights on competing in the 1936 Olympic Games. I want to stop right there and think about what I just told you, how he started. Okay? 1917, in the life he was living, 1936, he's training for the Olympics. Okay? In the Olympics, he became the youngest long-distance runner to ever make the Olympic team. He was 19 years old. He was still too experienced to challenge for the gold, but during the 36th Olympic race in Berlin, he finished eighth. But he had one of the fastest final laps in the history of the event. He was a leading candidate to break the four-minute barrier on the mile run. After the Olympics, he shattered collegiate records at the University of Southern California and became one of its most celebrated student athletes. At that time, still a sub-minute mile was considered nearly impossible feat, but many people began to whisper that he could possibly be the one to pull it off. He planned on going for the gold and the potential miracle mile in the 1940 Olympics, but the contest was called off after the start of World War II. With his Olympic dream temporarily dashed, Zamperini enlisted in the Army Air Corps in 1941. The story of his life says that he cheated death several times while serving as a B-24 Liberator bombardier in the Army Air Corps 372nd Bomb Squadron. During a bombing run over a tiny island in Japan, a Zero fighter plane attacked his airplane, seriously wounding several men and killing a crew member. The plane was leaking hydraulic fluid, and the shredded B-24 avoided disaster with an emergency landing on another island in Japan. Zamperini and his crewmates later learned that their airplane had been riddled with 600 holes from the enemy gunfire and shrapnel. He went on a search and rescue mission not long after that, and the plane that he was on the search and rescue had engine problems. Two engines quit, and they crashed in the ocean. There were only three of them that survived. It's already an amazing story to me of somebody's life, but at this point, he spent 47 days lost at sea. 47 days. They were adrift on the ocean on a pair of life rafts with only meager provisions. The three that survived spent the next several weeks braving blistering heat, hunger, dehydration, and sharks. On one occasion, a machine gunner from a passing Japanese bomber spotted them in the water and fired at their rafts, deflating one and leaving the other one on the verge of ruin. Zamperini and his fellow castaways survived on rainwater and an occasional captured bird or fish, but all soon saw their weight drop below, all three of them below 100 pounds. One of the crew members perished after 33 days at sea, leaving the only two. Zamperini and the other man's name was Phillips remained adrift for another 2 weeks before being captured by a Japanese Navy ship near the Marshall Islands. By then, the men had drifted an astonishing 2,000 miles and had been on the water, as I said, for 47 days. As a prisoner, he endured daily torment in three different Japanese interrogation centers and POW camps. Over the next 2 years, he suffered from disease, exposure, starvation, and near daily beatings from the guards. The Japanese corporal nicknamed the bird was at the POW camp took a particular glee in torturing Zamperini because of who he was. He pummeled Zamperini with clubs, belts, and fists and regularly threatened to kill him. On one occasion, he had him stand holding a heavy wooden beam above his head and threatened to shoot him if he dropped it. The Japanese tried to use him as a propaganda tool. Zamperini's reputation as a former Olympian saved him from execution at the hands of the Japanese, but it also saw him singled out for special punishment. Guards at one of the camps that he was held in forced a weak and starving Zapparini to run foot races against Japanese competitors. And then they beat him with clubs when he still had the nerve to win. Later, Japanese officials hauled him into their studio and tried to persuade him to read propaganda messages over the air. He had been given up for dead back home, and the Japanese hoped to use him as a tool to lower American morale and paint the U.S. government as being incompetent. Zamperini agreed to read a message telling his parents he was alive, but despite all the warnings that he would be condemned to a punishment camp, he refused to cooperate any further. Finally, the war was over, and later he reunited with his former captors after the war. Zamperini and his fellow POWs were liberated following the surrender in September 1945, but his wartime experiences would continue to haunt him. His years of malnourishment and torture left him unable to resume his career as a runner, and he became dependent on alcohol to stave off nightmares and flashbacks. Zamperini was saved from his post-traumatic stress after witnessing a sermon by an evangelist named Billy Graham in 1949. He went on to discuss his conversion to Christianity on nationwide speaking tours and started a wilderness camp for troubled youth. In 1950, he returned to Japan for the first time since his liberation to address his Japanese war criminals being held in a prison in Tokyo. While there, he shook their hands and embraced them. He told them in person that he forgave them for what they had done. The story about Zamperini is a movie that came out last year. It's called Unbroken. If you've not seen it, write it down. You need to watch that movie. Telling this quick story doesn't do it justice of what you'll see on the movie of what this guy went through. This was a man who was determined and committed to come home. He was determined and committed to live and to serve and to not allow outside forces to break his spirit. I want to share three things with you tonight that have to happen to get out of debt. And I want you to think about the story right there of Zamperini. The three things that have to happen to get out of debt are, number one, you have to want to. You have to want to. What does that mean? Wow. Because we say it, don't we? You can hear it a lot of times if you'll listen to people. They'll say it. But the question is, down deep inside, do you want to? You have to have the want to. See, Zamperini, everything that he went through was driven by his want to. That's what it was driven by. Jim Rohn is a famous inspirational speaker, and he had this quote: if you really want to do something, you'll find a way. If you don't, you'll find an excuse. One of the two. So the first thing that has to happen to get out of debt is there has to be a decision made. Now, I realize that in a room with this many people, we could have a wide range of different people, different areas of debt and how much. All the principles are the same. Doesn't matter. And going back to that scripture verse, if you're in debt for $10 or you're in debt for $10,000 or $100,000, the scripture still stands. And you need to do what you can to eliminate it. Because if you don't, you're a slave to the lender. And that's not what he wants. Second thing that has to happen is you have to commit and be determined. When you make a decision and do something like, if you say, I'm going to change our life, we are not going to have any debt, and you're committed and you're determined to do that, things are going to happen. Things are going to happen. See, one of the things that I read when I was reading the story of Zamperini, I watched the movie and I went online, I read stories about him that had been written, I went to Wikipedia, it gives all kinds of information there, and read all about him in there. And again, his driving attitude for him was a decision always moving forward, that he was going to come out of it. That's what has to happen. He was an amazing man. The third thing that has to happen is you have to have a plan. It will not just happen. You have to have a plan. The want to is the first step, but you got to have a plan. A plan of attack. A plan to get through it. Reading some stories about Zamperini and the things that he went through, what he would say is that every day he had a plan to get through that day. Get through that day. And he's holding hope in that the next day was going to be better. And then when the next day arrived, it didn't matter what happened. He stayed with the same focus, get through today. Because tomorrow's going to be better. I'm going to get out of here tomorrow. Tomorrow's the day. I just got to get through today. That was his plan. His plan was to attack that every day. Now, what I'm going to do is, in closing tonight, I'm going to share some things with you, and I'm going to really get with a solid plan for you next week, specifics, but I'm going to tell you a few things today. Now, I told you that I am a fan of Dave Ramsey, and I recommend him, and the plan that I recommend to get out of debt is what he uses, and it's called the Debt Snowball Plan. A lot of people have heard of it, but I'm going to go through it with you, okay? The Debt Snowball Plan. But here's what I need for you to do and to be ready for next week. Don't forget, we're giving away money next week, okay? Here's what I need you to do to be ready for next week. This first part should already be done, but I'm going to repeat it again because I want to make sure we're there. You need to know where you stand. You got to know the money that you have, what's coming in, the money that you owe. And I said this the other two times that I've talked about it, you can't guess about it. It can't be an estimate. If it is, you're going to come up short. It's not going to work. You got to know specifics. This is all about managing your wealth. That's how you manage, is you know. That's how you manage, is you know. You've got to know. So before next week, I want you to be sure that you have gone to the trouble to sit down and look at what you actually have coming in and what you're actually obligated to. Everything. List it out so you can look at it on paper. When you look at it on paper, this will tell you if you need to take on another job. It'll tell you if you need to sell some things. It'll help you make some decisions about some things that you need to change. But all the changes you make, you got to stay focused on this, just like Zamperini did, is that when I do what I do, I'm getting out of here. I'm getting out of here. And it's going to be great. It's going to be great. The next thing you need to do is, because I'm talking in general terms here tonight, but you've got to make the commitment to stop using credit. You got to draw a line in the sand that says, I'm not going to use credit. Now, I'm going to put my caveat on there because if you're disciplined, like I'm telling you, and you use a credit card and you pay it off, I'm okay with that. But if you got a lot of debt going on, that already tells me you don't operate that way. Okay? So if you're carrying balances anywhere, make a commitment that just says, I'm going to stop using credit. It will liberate you. It will liberate you. It'll change your world. It'll change everything about it. Make the commitment to stop using credit. Stay determined. You will soon discover a power that you'll be tapped into that you never dreamed of. You will all of a sudden become powerful. The next thing I want you to do is make a list of all your debts. And this is going to be a part of the snowball, okay? The first part I said, I wanted you to know what's coming in, what's going out. All that's good, but this is the piece of getting rid of the debt. I want you to make a list of all your debts, not your bills, but your debts. Credit cards, personal loans, car loans or leases, student loans, mortgages, second and third mortgages, any money that you owe on credit to somebody, list it down on a piece of paper. List who it is and what the balance is and what is the monthly payment, okay? This is part of the plan. Write down who you owe, the total balance that you owe, and what is the minimum payment being required by you, to you. All right? Make that list. Once you get it written down, jumble the list, and I want you to put it in this order, the smallest balance to the highest. Whatever you owe the least on is the first one. The next least is the second one, and so forth, all the way down the line, okay? Make that list. Now, what I'm telling you tonight, just to answer about the envelope too, don't bring that next week. That's for you. But I want you to do it. You got to have it. Now, if at this point in time, if you're not interested in doing it, I'm just going to tell you that's okay. It's okay. If you want to keep doing what you're doing, keep doing it. But I'm telling you that what God wants you to have is the abundant life that he talked to you about. That if you'll put the effort in that, if you'll be determined and committed, then you'll be blessed beyond your wildest dreams. I'm going to give you more details on all that next week. We're going to go through it. I want you to be sure and bring a piece of paper and a pen, because I'm going to go through the whole thing with you, okay? All right. What I wanted to finish with tonight is understanding this. When I watched that movie Unbroken, I already knew I was going to put it in here. Because that's all I saw in that picture, on that movie, and in the stories that I read, that what kept coming to me was, what determination? What commitment? What commitment? How many times do I just not go to the gym just because I just don't feel like it today? Wow. See, he doesn't think that way. Never had. I read you all the stuff about his life. Everything that he did, he was committed to. Even when he was committed to a life of crime, he was good at it. But he was committed to it. He had something special. Agreed? He had something really special. But the main message for all of us tonight is this. You got exactly what he's got. There's no difference. Every one of us in here would be capable of living the life like he did. It's inside of you. The difference is, do we engage in it? Do we put it to work? See, people give up all the time, but it's not because they don't have the ability. They just quit. It's their belief system. They just don't think they can, but they can. They can. That same spirit of commitment and determination that he showed in his lifetime, and even more, is in every one of us. We have it. We all have an ability to overcome obstacles no matter how big they are. Sometimes I dream, and I dream about what would happen. What would happen if just the people in this room at Eagles Way Church became debt-free? Just in this room, what would happen? And some of you are debt-free, I know for a fact, but we're all not. I shared with you with ours. But what would happen? What would we be able to do? What would we be able to do? See, to become debt-free, it eliminates almost all of your negative thoughts. You don't realize it right now, or you might, but a lot of negativity comes from the debt. It's hanging over you. It's the guard at the door. It's there. Becoming debt-free, you feel empowered. You feel victorious. I'll even go further. If you start working the plan, you'll start feeling victorious. And I know there's some people in here that's already working it. You start feeling victorious. It changes your mindset. You get rid of a defeated mindset. You get rid of the wondering, when will this ever end? When will we ever get over this? When will we ever get beyond it? You'll be free. And when you're free, then you can focus on good things. See, when I said, what could we do? What could we do? For our own families? For our church families? For missions around the world? What could we do if we were all debt free? Next week, I'm gonna really drive this thing home, understanding that we have the ability, let me rephrase that. We will leave a legacy for our kids, and we get to decide what that's going to be. Some of us were handed certain things. The question is, are you going to keep handing what's been handed down, or are you going to say, I'm going to change this? I got thinking about the other day how, and listen, I made this mistake. You know, if you were debt-free, I told you I dream a lot. Most of us in this room who've had kids who've come along and gotten 16, what do? We work, or we go out on credit and buy them a car, don't we? We go get them a car. Everybody's happy. It's the thing to do. I don't have the figures in front of me because I'm going to repeat this next week, but I'm pretty sure that by age 22 or 23, if we handed our children at 23 years of age $18,000 and put it in a money market account at 22, they never touched it again. When they're 65, they'd have over $2 million. $18,000. Don't hold me on all that. I don't have it with me, but I'm pretty sure it's close. Like it was $18,000 to $20,000. If you put that in a money market account for somebody and they never put another dime in it, by the time they're 65, the average, the way money is made through the money market, they would have over $2 million when they turn 65. Now, see, we think more on lines of when they turn 16 because that's now. What would change if there was a new trend started that we invested in for their retirement and then what they would be able to do for that next generation and then the following generation by passing that down? I just dream. I dream sometimes. We're going to leave a legacy. We get to decide what to leave. I want you to be ready for next week. Make a decision to be committed and determined. And then let's get the plan next week. See what happens.